Hello, everybody. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. On Criminal Minds, we talk about Xeroderma pigmentosum. Stay tuned.
Tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. We are here doing the Criminal Minds After Show, Season 12, Episode 18, Hell's Kitchen. I believe we have a full panel
today. We do.
Wow.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Joining me, I have
Michelle Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Michelle _ Cullen.
I'm Karina Vargas. You can find me everywhere on Twitter and Instagram at KarinaXVRGS.
Everywhere. I'm Chris Howard. Find me at Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. We have a full panel. It only took us 18 episodes.
We got
really excited to talk about this episode with you and everybody who's following us. Real quick thoughts about this episode.
I thought it was really, really good. I think they're definitely building up momentum as we get to the end of the season, and it was just... It was another episode where you felt sympathy for the unsub. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating.
True.
Yeah. I thought it was very creepy. I loved the actor in it. It was gave me chills every time like he talked. So good.
Uh-huh.
Nice. I thought it was exquisite. They're doing exactly what I wanted them to do, leaving Reed in prison. Yep. And he's doing some cool stuff. So I dig it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It felt like a slower paced episode because there was just more conversational dialogue. But like you said, Michelle, I even have it in my notes, empathetic for the unsub, which is something that we've been doing lately. As of late in these last few episodes, I feel like we're feeling more for the unsub. Like they're not as bad as you think that they could be. But yeah, let's talk about it, shall we? Let's talk about the victims. Fortunately, we didn't have a lot of dead people in this episode
compared to last week, where we had like nine.
We technically did, but we didn't have to deal with that.
That's true. Yeah. Well, we didn't really see the killings. They already happened, and plus, when we'll get to it, but the victim at the end lived. So we really didn't see deaths.
Well, we don't know what's happening behind in the cages.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
I didn't want to give away too much too soon.
We'll get there, too. But, yeah, so let's start with the victimology as we usually do. We started with the case with this girl, Katie Hammond. She's 15, going on 16. Mm-hmm. It's literally her birthday. She was kidnapped. We don't know where she is. Missing persons report. But we found out that there were two girls beforehand. Mm-hmm. It was cold case that looked exactly like her. Creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy.
The only thing that was different is that they were addicts. Yeah. And then she wasn't. So
yeah,
that was interesting.
Hence the reason for the cold case. Mm-hmm. They lived on the streets. They were addicts. No one really knew who they were. People weren't really looking for them.
Yeah.
Which sounds sad, you know. It just makes me think how many cold cases are actually out there that have to be solved. Go watch that show. Creepy. I felt like this episode had a different. It strayed from the usual format, which they've been doing a lot lately.
I agree with that. Karina and I were talking about it earlier. They didn't actually deliver a profile because they didn't need to. The detective who called them in already had a profile and was like, here's everything. Help me find this girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they still came out with, I'm real impressed with Walker and how he's kind of cool the way he just gives up his information. He's like, yeah, it must be this. It's like got so much experience that it just comes out like kind of off the cuff when he's like, oh, it's got to be that, got to be that, maybe that. But so we got a little bit of that. We got a little bit of them throwing in, why is it that he's cleaning the bodies? Why is it that he's leaving them face up? Why is it? So we saw a little bit of that. I still enjoyed it. Yeah, but I love the format. I love them going a little painting outside the lines. So I think it's very, very cool.
And I also liked talking about Walker, that they were giving more into his story, like a lot of it, like I didn't know that he had a daughter, you know,
right?
Or that he was in war, or he was in the war. I don't think I ever got that.
I did the same thing with him that I did with Tara. I was like, oh, I'm going to file that nugget away. He has a 16-year-old daughter. All right. Learning. Learning about him.
Well, Criminal Minds usually just brings a lot of new people in, and then it takes a while to, like, finally learn the backstory or their family or just, like, anything personal on them, which I, like, I don't mind, but it is pretty interesting, especially Walker's, like, our newest member to the team. I felt like he was all over this episode. That helped in a way, you know. His background helped with the unsub, with the victim, even the Satanama meditation, which is interesting.
I was actually trying to do it and see if it relaxed me.
What's with the relation? Did it relax you?
A little bit.
Really?
I mean, I guess you have to concentrate while you're doing it, like really, really concentrate.
What's with the relationship with him and Garcia? It's like, it's just getting closer now, and
I think, you know, they're still co-workers, because, I mean, Garcia just obviously mingles with all of them, but I think they just saw each other first, and they...
Because it was... He's not the one that she had the kind of adversarial relationship with. That's, what's the other guy's name?
Luke? Alves?
Alves. Yeah. She's a little bristly toward him.
Yeah. Didn't really see Alves in this episode.
No.
Surprise.
Or Garcia either, that much.
Or who?
Yeah, Garcia.
Oh, yeah, Garcia. I mean, she gave us a little bit of information on the unsub, but that's what she usually does.
Yeah.
So at the beginning and at the end.
Yep.
During the pivotal moments of the episode as she usually does. But, yeah, did you ever really think, as we're learning more about the unsub, did you ever really think blood-sucking and vampires? Because even the DVR description of this episode said urban vampire.
The moment I saw that, I thought that. But
But did you think, like, blood-sucking, like, he was that type of unsub?
I did. I did at the beginning. Because they were talking about, he takes out their blood, or, like, a lot of it. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe he's drinking it. I was like, oh, vampire something. It has to be something about vampires, but... I was kind of shocked it wasn't.
I don't know. I think maybe I'm weird. Because he wasn't biting them to get the blood, I didn't really think vampire. I was just like, okay, he's really messed up and doing a weird transfusion.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like many other serial killers that existed in real life, where he's just drinking the blood and chilling.
Yeah, but you'd think, like, it's not like a transfusion, right? It just goes in your stomach if you drink it. It doesn't really get into the... into your blood, does it? It doesn't work like a blood transfusion if it's going through the mouth.
I don't actually know what happens when you drink blood.
I imagine the stomach would absorb a little bit of blood, but I'm not quite sure of the actual biological...
Because, well, you know, they've done experiments...
physiological aspects of what happens.
Well, if they take young mice blood and give infusions to older mice, it increases their vitality and their lifespan. So there's science behind those types of things.
If it's like infusion, that's like straight intravenously through the vein, rather as sucking blood that goes like through the
stomach.
Yeah.
So if we start drinking baby's blood, it's not going to do us much good.
Yeah, no.
No, okay.
I wouldn't suggest doing that either.
Okay.
I would refrain.
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't want to think vampire, even though DVR kind of threw me off a little bit. But this isn't the first time we've had an unsub that kills his victims, like, via insanguination or blood-sucking.
Sanguination. Yeah. That's her fancy word for blood-sucking. That's like three fancy words you've used in this show.
That's a fancy word for draining blood. Not sucking blood, just draining blood.
And what's that disease again?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Xeroderma pigmentosum.
Okay, sanguination. Yeah. By the zero double good.
Yeah.
I think also, of course, I forget what season it is. I feel like it's 5 or 6. Where
season 5?
Well, she already knows where I'm going.
The
musician whose assistant was actually that was more of a vampire feel to me. This was just a guy in a red light with a candle, and I was like, well, he's creepy, but so far I'm not convinced. No, so
I totally thought of that episode too. It's season 5, the musician.
Thank you.
Even make the reference to Twilight in that episode.
They did.
Plus, they used the force of a blunt, pointy object that helped. Yikes.
Yeah.
Being a Cullen, how's this feel?
Oh, no.
You see all this.
Nope, there's that.
You did it.
No.
It's there.
It's vampire
episode.
I mean,
it's there. It's for the taking. I don't sparkle in the sun.
In fairness, you were a Cullen before the Cullens.
I was a Cullen before it became popular in the mid-2000s.
Yes, I did think about that episode too.
You did?
Hence the reason why, like, this isn't the first time we've seen an unsub killed this way. And I feel like, we're getting, like, season 12, where a lot of episodes in that some unsubs are going to feel like they're repeating, mm-hmm. but slightly different, some type of variation on that. I don't mind it, though, because mm-hmm. this unsub felt completely different from most unsubs that we saw. We got, like, full-on conversations with him.
Yeah,
it was good.
What did you think of his story that he was telling Katie about the dead woman body turning into 100,000 flies? Ew.
I mean, what else is gonna... If you can't go out in the sunlight, you have very limited stories and life experiences to draw from, I imagine.
It's true.
Right.
But I can't even imagine growing up with an illness like that where you can't experience life to the fullest. And so you contemplate those things. Like, when you die, you just die. And then you create 100,000 new lives that are disgusting. And it just... Sorry if anyone loves flies. I'm not one of those people. But it's fascinating how the circle of life works. And, like, what else are you going to think about when you live in the sewer?
Well, and it's not unusual for people to develop weird beliefs and stuff, because he believed that drinking their blood was going to keep him from burning. But, I mean, in Africa, they believe that they rape a pregnant woman, that they're going to get rid of their AIDS or something like, or a virgin, and like crazy stuff that people take on that end up in crazy behaviors, and they have no basis in reality whatsoever. So it's like, it's not an isolated incident that this would happen. This is very, you know, it's very possible, conceivable.
I thought it was interesting when he like let her ask him a question. And then, like, the question was pretty much, like, what does he do when he leaves? And how he said he had a job. And I was like, what kind of job can you get if you can't be out in the sun? Mm-hmm. If you burn? So I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, it's like we never really got that answer.
It seemed like he was running that parking lot, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought that maybe that's...
Yeah, we or, like, took care of the building. I don't know.
It sounded like it was a mortuary at first. And then it looked like the parking lot because he was in that little...
And the lady asked, like, oh, you need to tell your boss to turn on the lights.
Put some lights in.
Mm-hmm. I know, because he told that story, so I was like, oh, he works with dead bodies. Okay, everything makes sense. And then it was just him in a little box at night, and I was like, no, that makes more sense. Okay.
That does. But, you know, the whole one question, yes or no question, that allowed the audience to know that he is open to letting someone in and letting someone get close and personal. Mm-hmm. Which gave me hope for him a little bit, that he's not sociopath, he's not psychotic in that certain way, that he longs for a connection, really, it seems like.
Yeah.
Because he can't go out into the world to make those human connections.
Yeah, because he's so isolated, I feel like that's why he wants to have a conversation with his victims.
Yeah.
And that's probably not uncommon either. I mean, you hear a lot of people that work in police and things like that, they say when you get close to the bad guys, that they've got likable personalities on one side, and then they're doing all this crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I thought was interesting about the unsub is that because he can't get light and go out, and I kind of got the feeling that he can't really see well either. But his sensory overload of hearing, he could hear everything, despite not being with people. But he just sat there and can hear all these sound effects of the world going on up above him.
You want to just tell him, lighten up, huh?
No.
Ah, that was a joke. No. Okay. All right.
Yeah, thank you. Failed.
Yep.
That was...
But I thought that was interesting. I thought that was an interesting character development, and Walker, in the end, ended up using that against him a little bit. Oversensory load.
Overload. I thought it was more that Walker was scared. Like, we saw a little fear in Walker, because he was disoriented, and he was in an unfamiliar territory, and he was in the dark. I think they needed red light more for us to see what was happening as viewers, but I don't think it would be that bright.
He paused before going in, too, huh? And he said, I was in, when he was in the war in, where was it?
Sri Lanka.
Yeah, he said, I was in a very dark place. Mm-hmm. And then he paused before going down in the place. So it makes you wonder if he was having a little PTSD there.
Mm. Yeah. A little bit. I like the red lighting, though. It took a second for the eyes to adjust, but I thought it was interesting because red, you know, can symbolize so many different things, like danger or love, and I felt like for this particular unsub, it might have been a mix of both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Interesting.
It made it look cool, though, just right. to watch. Yeah. Especially yeah. all those long scenes of long dialogue are just in pure red.
Yes.
Yes, VR. I thought it was neat. What did so we see the BAU team obviously track him down and everything, but talking to Katie's parents, and we realize that the parents are divorced. It's not pretty, but we find out that Katie's actually been visiting her father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the parents' dysfunction added to the yeah. their dysfunctional relationship added to the mix and provided the opportunity for it to go down that way.
Yeah, but more opportunities for anyone to
see her.
Yeah, pick her out.
Yeah.
And follow her patterns.
But it's hard to predict that in your thinking, though. I mean, it was lame that it went down the way that it did and that the father was seeing her behind the scenes and doing all that stuff, but it's only really in, unless I'm just a fool, but it's in the aftermath where you can look back and go, okay, yeah, you were creating a target in all those places. Cause I don't know if I'm thinking of, maybe I am. Is it my 16-year-old daughter that's taking 3 different subway buses? Do you think in advance I'm making her a target for somebody?
Well, but that's
depends on if she regularly takes the subway.
She was doing it,
yeah, right.
So it's not like that they were making a target; she was making herself a target.
But the father knew,
unbeknownst.
Though. The father knew.
The father knew the daughter was only going to him,
right.
But didn't know that someone actually adopt her.
Right, exactly. And so, but the mother came down on him saying, "You made her a target. You put her in all those places." And it's like, huh, I wonder if, as a responsible parent, I guess it just depends if she's taking the subway anyway and all sorts of other things, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because she grew up in the city. I understand where the mom would be coming from, but micromanaging her children
and that's what I meant, yeah.
basically hounding them for details of what it's like at their father's while dealing with a contested divorce, that's not easy on any human being, let alone a 16-year-old. Of course she's going to want to go somewhere where she doesn't feel the pressure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
I did feel bad for the mom, too, though, when she had a conversation with JJ, and she's talking about, you know, when people lose their spouses, they become widows, but someone losing their child, there's no name for it.
That's true.
And I felt that was, like, very relatable and humanistic.
Yep.
What I felt, too, when she said that was that her sister had said, oh, I don't know if, like, I'm still going to be a sister if she dies. And when JJ was talking to her about it, it just kind of reminded me of JJ and her sister.
And her sister.
And how all that happened. Yeah. So I was like, oh.
Yes.
It's sad news.
That was sad.
That was also season 5.
Can you name seasons too? No, I was going to say, we got 3 now. Name seasons and episodes.
I can pinpoint some, but I can't say exactly.
That's great.
I did like that. It was a sad conversation, but it really grounded everything, mm-hmm. I feel like, in reality.
Yeah.
And then this unsub, I felt he was really believable. I kind of liked him.
I liked him a lot.
I know.
I was telling her that, too. I was like, his acting was really good. Like, it was creepy, but it was so understandable that it was such a good performance.
Yeah. Props to Nico Nicotera. That's his name.
Mm. He's good. He was on Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I really enjoyed him because, you know, just his conversations, it didn't seem like he had a, like, low intelligence that would cause him to do something. It seemed like he was just lonely and mm-hmm. he was longing for something mm-hmm. that helped him get back out into the world, really.
What's the thing with him sticking his hand in the light and not burning? So do we really think that the blood was affecting him in a positive way, or he just believed it?
He believed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And it kind of showed physically after 7 seconds that then his skin started to burn.
Oh, did it? After pretty quickly still.
I think he was just waiting to see because it was like 5 seconds before, and so mm-hmm. now it was like 7 seconds. Yeah. So it kind of, in his mind, her blood was helping him.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing that he says, she was the one, she was special. Mm-hmm. So Katie's blood helped him be out in the sun longer.
How'd you like to be his special one?
Yeah, no. No. Not in that.
I will pass.
And I also think because she wasn't like a drug addict, and I think maybe he knew that. I think that's why also in his mind he was like, okay, well, she has to be better than the other ones because she wasn't an addict.
Yep, and they even, with the dead bodies going over the coroner's reports, there were some that only had 1 liter of blood taken out and some that had 3 taken out. So the cleaner the victim was, the more blood he used to try to test.
And how about her psychology through the whole ordeal? She really held herself together, surprisingly so. Like, she kept it together all the way through to the end, to the point where she even got him to let her run.
Yeah.
That takes some the solid character.
Yeah, the blind, I don't know, blind faith, I guess you can call it. But yeah, the conversations with Katie and the concepts, especially talking about, you know, do you believe in fate? Mm-hmm. And I thought she was wise beyond her years.
Mm-hmm. She was like using like reverse psychology, like saying like, oh, well, if you let me try to find a way out, then if I can't find one, then it'll be like faith actually brought us together. So it's like reverse psychology on him.
And pretty I was sharp.
Like, I'll come smart. Back.
Yeah.
I'll come
yeah.
back. And that just kind of ties with what Walker said to the parents, like in talking about his own daughter. It's like, I can't imagine, but if this was my daughter, I wish I would have given her all the tools to survive. Apparently the parents gave all the tools to Katie for her to survive, so... Mm. She was good.
Yeah,
there you go.
And admittedly so. I liked this unsub, though. I felt for him.
I did, too. And it was the only thing that I had to think about was in the coroner's reports for the 2 recent victims that they found, as well as some of the older cold cases. They had broken bones, and so I had to think about that. And I think falling from the sewer.
Yeah.
Great.
They tried to get out, too, yeah.
Yeah.
And fell. And that's why he shouted his concern of, don't do that, you're going to hurt yourself.
But it was because he needed her blood, I think, more than more caring than about her. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the whole, I don't want to call it takedown because it was really like 2 shots. But, you know, the BAU team going and finding the van that apparently located all these places, that's where he was operating out of Hell's Kitchen.
Yep.
And they find his van that's all blacked out because he's avoiding the sun. But that was creepy how you have to go through the van just to get down
that
to.
That was cool. Such a cool shot.
It's
so
cool. Like a
smart.
Speakeasy.
Yeah, it was really smart.
Who would have thought that? It was smart.
Yep.
I just thought it was cool because we haven't seen that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And using the thing to kind of like move the bar to move it.
Yeah.
They did that on National Treasure. That wasn't surprising to me. But it's such a cool move. It's how they steal the Declaration. It's fine.
Right. You're right.
I wonder if that's where he got it.
No. I feel like, unfortunately, that's a more common thing than we think it is.
To pick up the...
To pick up the sewer. Did you
the
not...
Sewer crate?
I mean, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, like, you're general, right. If there's turtles down there.
Crime. Yeah. Like, just... Yeah. The sewer grate is an easy... There's a ladder. It's fine.
Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's more common than we think.
Those two were separate thoughts that were in the same sentence.
That was the same thought.
Separate thoughts in the same sentence.
Sure,
but it's good to get how your thinking is.
All good thoughts.
Stand
by it.
But I liked when they're trying to figure out everything and they're getting close to catching him, and they're talking about, oh, transfusions. What would benefit from transfusions? And then JJ, out of everyone.
I know. She just knew it.
It's like, well, girl's smart.
Where did she get that? There's a rare blood disorder called...
Xeroderma pigmentosum. but when you're, like, the skin burns when you're exposed to light. And I feel like if Reed was a part of this, he would immediately pick this up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, he had all these diseases listed in his head, and we wouldn't even...
And how many people had it in the world and all this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You would have had all the statistics.
Apparently it's rare and not a lot of people have it. But that guy had it in Hell's Kitchen.
That guy did have it, yes.
Xeroderma pigmentosum. It's fun to say.
I wish there was a thing every time you said it. Yeah, it'd be fun.
We're giving you credit.
Hard. But I liked it. Anything else about the actual case before we move on to Reed?
I was a little confused that he shot him right away. Like,
oh, yeah,
he didn't
just
have
turn
a,
around,
I know
bam,
it was
bam.
Yeah. That was a little off-putting to me.
I think to me it was because it was dark too and he didn't
he
know
hadn't
whether
found
he
the
had
girl. Yeah.
Yeah, and what if he had a weapon on him too?
Oh, yeah.
So maybe that's why I thought he just shot.
Yep. And I think since you mentioned it earlier, like maybe a tiny, tiny bit of PTSD.
Could be.
And yeah. just reaction. But I thought it was fascinating that when we opened at the top of the show, he said Sri Lanka, and we all kind of had this sad moment of, oh, he was in the war. This was not a happy memory for him. And then he was doing this with the unsub as he was dying. And he was like, I learned this in Sri Lanka. And for the unsub, that was a magical... mythical place that was just happy possibility, because he had no idea what Sri Lanka was like or who was there or anything about it. So
I've
never
been there. I've never been anywhere.
It sounds fascinating to me. It doesn't sound like a dark place to me.
No, and so that was just a fascinating juxtaposition.
Yeah, I liked how the meditation came full circle in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I think it worked.
I think so.
Especially for this particular unsub who had a softer, more emotional side, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into Reed. He's still in prison. Goodness. When will he ever get out? Well, we saw his friend died. Slit.
Delgado. Two weeks
dead.
Ago.
Two dead. Weeks. So this has been going on for a while now. But he befriends this. Well, I don't really want to say befriends, but this Malcolm guy. Did you ever think he was bad or good, for that matter? Never thought he was good. I didn't.
But I didn't think he was that bad either.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
But I thought he was just a patsy.
Yeah, same here. I was like, oh, what is he going to do? I thought he was actually, because I kind of fell for it, that I thought that he was... with, you know, connections with Shaw.
That's what I thought.
That he could actually help just be another friend towards Reed. Turns out, no. But it was interesting how Kelvin didn't even know. Like, Shaw didn't even know who Malcolm was. I was like, oh, no.
Well, they were saying he did know, though.
I felt that he did. Like, I kind of was like, was are you sure, right? Shaw? Like, are you sure you don't know him? Because I felt like he did.
Yeah,
I was like, he's just pretending that he
that's what Reed, that's what Reed was calling
like
him on.
I felt like he was pretending, like he didn't know.
I agree with Reed's call.
Yeah,
it was a good call by Reed, but is it Shaw? Is the guy's name
Shaw?
He was hiding it so well and playing the role of not being the bad guy behind some of the things that were happening. If that was it, so it was very astute on Reed's part to catch that, because I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and Reed would pick that up. I mean, he is a profiler. He knows how to pick up on people's macro expressions, and when someone's lying, I feel like Shaw was lying. He knows who Malcolm is.
Pretty cool. I love what Reed did.
Yeah. Oh, well, did you? Okay, so the new batch of drugs come in, and Reed has to be the one to push it through. But we saw Reed tamper with it. He put ammonia in it. I was like, first of all, how the heck did you get ammonia in prison?
It was laundry detergent.
In the laundry. It was something in the laundry.
When he was actually there, there was a shot when he was actually putting like the water drips on it. The bottle clearly said ammonia.
Oh, really? But it was crystallized.
Crystallized ammonia.
Yeah. How did he get it into crystals?
But my question is, how does he even have access to it in prison? Why would, if it's part of the laundry?
That's what they
I wouldn't trust a inmate.
You're not supposed to snort laundry detergent.
You shouldn't snort anything.
Not really supposed to snort anything.
Yeah. But the fact, this was where I was just questioning. I was like, how the heck did he get his hands on ammonia to tamper with the drugs?
Well, I mean, clearly they're making the case that it was in the laundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
But he had access for it because he was in the laundry room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But apparently the guys had to test it out, and they used it on Malcolm and Shaw.
Well, it got distributed everywhere. Yeah. Pretty cool. And you got to wonder, what's the effect of that? I mean, is it going to kill him? Is it going to just take him out for a couple of weeks, or what's
I don't think he would have I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of kill or be killed,
I feel that if one of them dies, it's gonna make Reed a murderer.
That's true.
You know, he purposely switched it, and so causing them to bleed, he didn't physically cut them or anything like that, but in a way he still killed them if they die.
Yeah, so, like, even if he was exonerated for the whole scratch thing, which we're thinking of scratch, he would go down for that. Yeah.
Well, he was
That's a whole nother case.
He would have gone down for drug trafficking if not this. So it's like,
in a federal
pick your crime.
Yeah. murder is even bigger than
if they die. What would be fascinating, what would be fantastic, is if they died and he just never told anybody.
Interesting place to use the word fantastic.
I just think that would be a fantastic storyline.
What I caught was that the guard, when Reed asked the guard, what's going on? He was, he said, I even wrote it down.
Bad batch.
He said, bad batch. And so I was like, okay, well, the guard obviously is in on it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I have in my notes. I was like, Wilkins. He knows about this.
Mm-hmm. So, he's been in on everything.
So,
yeah,
again, if someone did die from this bad batch, Wilkins could blame Reed and totally make Reed guilty. Like, he could point Reed out. Be like,
he doesn't seem to know so far that it's Reed, though.
Didn't?
I think he did.
Like, he said bad batch. He didn't say bad batch.
He'll know that Reed was a part of it when Reed's the only person who's not affected by it.
Right. Question is, where did it start?
And I feel like he's always been targeting Reed from the very beginning, from the moment. Remember when I was talking about how he just pinpointed him out?
Which could be part of Shaw's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Shaw could be pulling the puppet strings all the way back toward that.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Didn't Shaw say at one point that he doesn't do drugs? Did I make that
he
up?
He lied if he did.
Because that's why Shaw's I thought that was a powerful moment. Because I thought he was the puppeteer in prison is what we're all thinking. And he wouldn't do drugs because he knows what they do to people. And he doesn't want to be involved. And then to see him getting sick, I was like, someone's a liar.
We already knew that.
But that was my question, because I was so surprised to see Shaw was affected.
Yeah. That was cool.
It makes me wonder, how the heck that they even did these drugs. Were they forced by the other guys who are actually beating Reed up? But I don't know, if he does drugs. There's a difference.
Forced to do the drugs? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
They're doing them because they want them.
Yeah.
Reed got shot up, and we don't know how, by supposedly Scratch. Yeah. So, I mean, it might have happened. But there's just so much that happened that we didn't see that we're trying to fill in the gaps for. And it doesn't make sense that how Calvin got affected by this.
I think he ordered the drugs. Because if you remember, the lockdown was for B block, and it was the distraction so that the drugs could be dispersed in their block.
Mm-hmm. While this all is of all the guards
were focused.
This is all Shaw. It's got, and it's too bad that we've already seen Scratch, because wouldn't it be cool if Scratch was Shaw? Oh, I love that.
That would have been
really cool.
Switch.
But anyway.
Twist there.
Right.
But it was interesting because, especially now seeing Reed do this, we can see Reed is definitely torn with this decision. Mm-hmm. Because even at the beginning of the episode, when he's talking to Rossi, he's like, you're not a bad person. That's what makes it different from everybody and these inmates. And we see Reed, he's having all these nightmares. He's writing in his journals, what did he say? Starting to think like them, starting to survive like them.
And you have to, basically. I mean, from a psychological perspective, they say that behaviors are geared for adaptation. So if you're in the jungle, you best learn how to fight in the jungle to survive, or you're gonna die.
Yeah.
So people adapt, and we get to see that. It's cool.
It's a dog-eat-dog world. Got to fall in deeper in to get to them. Fall in deeper to get to them. So pretty much Reed is playing everybody's game here.
Yep.
Even though he doesn't like it.
But he beat them, and he's so smart that you got to assume that he's going to get pretty darn good at it if he continues down that path.
Yeah,
until someone stops him.
If they can. With his intelligence, I mean, he could be like a Lex Luthor, to put it in your, in a way that Ninja Turtles, Lex Luthor, Superman.
No, totally wrong. No.
Stop. Okay, anyway.
Also in that quote, he had said, or like what he was writing in his journal in the beginning, he said, because I made a choice. And he repeated that again. And so I was thinking, what choice is it? Is he talking about the murder that he's being pinned on by Mr. Scratch, or the drugs?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or the decision to stand up and fight.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what that choice is.
What choice is it?
That is powerful.
Ooh. Yeah, deep. I feel like Reed is, we're going to see more I don't want to say crazy, but like more twisted things from Reed just to get survive in this prison. I wouldn't say fantastic. It's terrible.
But what a great storyline and plot, and for him, for the actor, it's like it's just a neat place to go.
Just makes me wonder how much he's going to change when he gets out. Yes. Like how much his personality is going to change, like after going through all of this. What happens to him? Will he be the same lovable Reed that we know?
He'll be a formidable
knowing what
opponent.
He's capable of doing.
I feel like if he and Derek Morgan interact in the season finale, which I feel like they probably will, it's going to be a shocking moment for Morgan to see
Reed. Like what he builds Reed into is what destroys him.
What?
You know, what he's built Reed into by tricking him and getting him in there and getting him in prison and all that stuff. So he's built Reed into something new. You know, he contributed to the evolution of Reed. Then that new evolved Reed takes him down with how he's evolved. That would be fascinating. Mm. Does that make sense?
Who are you talking about? Are you talking about Morgan?
Is he Scratch?
No.
Oh, shit.
So confused. I was like, Morgan? No.
Who's Morgan?
The last time.
Shaw. Oh, my God.
See, if Shaw and Scratch are the same person.
Morgan is a former profiler who left last season.
And
Reed and Morgan are good friends.
What episode? What episode did he leave in?
The end of last season.
Actually, Penal. It was like the end of, like, near the end of the last season, because even Emily comes back the episode afterwards.
Yep.
So it wasn't the finale, it was near the end.
I think the last interaction we had with Morgan and Spencer was when Morgan handed Spencer the card that said Hank Spencer, Morgan, and was like, will you be his godfather? And it was this happy, pure moment. Mm. And then one season later, however much time has passed, I'm very intrigued to see what that's like in the season finale.
Yeah. We'll definitely see those two interact again.
I would be so disappointed if we didn't.
And of course, we're going to get Morgan and Penelope together.
Yep. And Alvez will awkwardly walk into it.
Be like, he's like, I get
it. I'm very excited for that interaction of them three.
I know.
Alvez.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
But anything else about this episode? I thought it was really good. I mean, though it wasn't like as fast-paced as it was, it still really made you think a lot.
It was an engrossing episode. I was enthralled by it the entire time, and I loved the end quote because it was a riddle.
It was a riddle.
That was so cool.
Yes. Cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind stars. And it lies behind stars and under hills and empty holes it fills. It comes first and follows after. Ends life, kills laughter. J.R.R. Tolkien. You guys know what the answer is?
No.
Ends life.
I saw your sheet.
Oh, cheated.
Oh, you've got the answer?
I'm sitting right next to you.
It's something like the wind or air or...
Isn't that one of the riddles?
You want to guess?
No, I don't know.
It's
dark.
The dark.
The dark.
That's one of the riddles from The Hobbit, right?
Can you read the riddle one more time after having given us that?
Yeah. Cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind stars and under hills and empty holes it fills. It comes first and follows after, ends life and kills laughter.
Wow.
The dark.
The dark.
Yeah. Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Well. Speaking of other interesting things, profile! Let's do it. We need a sound effect for that.
I think you need to do something like this with your fingers or something.
That's really, you can't hear that, though. But the whole Satanama meditation I thought was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It is actually a powerful tool for preventing or stopping Alzheimer's disease. It increases all aspects of cognitive function, perception, thinking, reasoning, and remembering. And reduces stress levels while improving short-term memory. The meditation is a combination of chanting a mantra while moving the hands through mudra. Mantra and mudra are also Sanskrit words, so which means mantra means often repeated word or phrase, and mudra means the motion of hands. So it's the dance of the hands while you're saying Satanama. And what I thought also was interesting about the Sa is birth, the beginning, infinity, totality of everything. Ta is life, existence, creativity, which manifests from infinity. Na is death, change, and transformation of consciousness. And Ma is rebirth, regeneration, and resurrection, which allows us to consciously experience the joys of infinite.
Nice.
Very interesting things about Satana Ma meditation. And Hell's Kitchen, for those who don't know, because when I think Hell's Kitchen, I just think it's a television show. But it's actually known as Clinton. It's a neighborhood on the west side of Midtown Manhattan in New York.
And that's where Daredevil lives.
I don't know. I don't watch Daredevil. Yeah. But, yeah, that's it for my profile section. We do have a little bit of news, just slight. So we know Shamar Moore is coming back. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's been recently, you know, working on his big screen movie, romantic comedy, The Bounce Back, which he produced and who was the star of. And but he's currently filming a CBS pilot, SWAT.
Yeah.
So he's busy working on that, which is the reboot of the 1970s series of the same name. But there's an interesting article, or an interview more so, of Shamar Moore. He says, talking about coming back for Cronenman's, because I believe they just wrapped, or they're in the middle of wrapping. He says, "It was different, but it was the same. It was like going home. Even though I had been gone for a year, it felt like I was just there last week. It was home. It was family. It was so familiar, and we just got right into it in the acting and the camaraderies and the jokes." Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and there he's always talking about, like, it because, you know, he works in the industry, he can't make the decisions like, oh, I want to come back. Mm-hmm. Like, other people have to approve of him coming back. So he says, you know, the elevator doors close, but they can't always open again. Derek Morgan is not dead, and I will tease you this. Derek Morgan does not die in the finale. So, yay. And he says, some real deep stuff does happen, but Derek Morgan kicking the bucket is not one of them. So Derek Morgan will come back, but he will not die in the show, thankfully.
That's good. Leaving his character open.
To come back again.
At some point, maybe season 14, 15.
Because people were so worried that they were going to kill him last season, remember?
They tried so hard.
I mean, they've tried killing all these profilers, but, you know, they just come back kicking and screaming even harder. So, he's not going to die. I'm happy. And he will contribute. But do we have any predictions?
Your AfterBuzz TV prediction.
I so would like to predict that, like, Reed was really Scratch or something like that. Really cool, you know? No. But I can't predict that because I know it's not true.
I would predict that the guard... I think maybe more of him will kind of come out as to where he stands in the jail and like who he talks to, I guess, or who's his leader.
Who he reports to.
Yeah, he reports to, type of thing.
His boss.
Yeah, so I feel that coming.
I feel another moment with Shaw and Alves coming.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
I can maybe see that. Probably.
Well, the fact that, I mean, Elvis wasn't even really there this episode.
He wasn't.
And,
Tara wasn't there either.
Yeah, no. She was, what was it, expert?
She was an expert witness.
Expert witness, yeah. There she goes.
They get paid a lot of money.
I'm sure they do. Well, just being an FBI profiler, I'm sure you make a lot. It's just really upsetting that because, like, the cast is so big that usually one person is gone every episode. You know, it's very rare you see all of them actually really together anymore.
Yeah.
And now that Reed's in prison, there's usually, like, one person is off the episode just to, quote-unquote, go visit him.
Yeah.
It's been like that
every
episode since. I still think, now that we know that Wilkins is part of this, his boss is Scratch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Scratch is still at the prison, you guys. I'm going to just keep saying it until it comes true.
Yeah.
The manifest out there.
You think he's at the prison somewhere?
Jail?
Or
Scratch is definitely working the prison system here.
Right.
Something's happening.
I don't know. We haven't talked about him in a couple episodes.
Yeah. But when Morgan comes back, he's going to have information on Scratch. Be like, yo, Scratch was there at the prison the whole time. And I was right. I don't know. I'm hoping that happens. All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in every single week. In the meantime, where can we keep following you, Chris?
At Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram.
And you guys can find me everywhere at KarinaXBRGS.
And you can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Collins.
And you can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. You can follow all of us here, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms at AfterBuzzTV. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing, keep watching the show. We still got more to go, and we still have to catch Scratch. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.